Hey guys, I'm Esther, owner of Sarath Design.
And I'm Jen, owner of Hella June Creative. Welcome to Better, the Brand Designer Podcast.
We're all about broadcasting conversations that support our design community, uncovering industry secrets, and offering actionable advice.
Just remember, the only designer you need to be better than
is the one you were yesterday.
Hello, friends. Welcome back to Better, the Brand Designer Podcast. It is a wonderful morning here in Chicago, Illinois, and I am so happy to be here with you guys today. Just a little update on my life. I feel like I've been running around like crazy. It's been a busy month. March has been crazy with lots of travel. I was in Los Angeles for a friend's bachelorette party, and then I came back for a week, and then my partner and I went to Las Vegas with his brother and our sister-in-law, and we were there for a week, which was wild, and it was so much fun. I was talking to a lot of my friends, and they were like, oh, you did Vegas? I could never. Like, it's not my favorite spot. And I will say it wasn't my favorite spot. We did do a ton of things. Like, we didn't club hop. That's not really our thing. And we barely gambled. Like, that's also not really our thing, but we went to shows. My favorite thing was the food, the drinks, the ambiance. Like, there are so many things to see and experience. And actually, before I went to Vegas, I had done a tarot reading for myself. I do that occasionally. And I was asking, like, what am I meant to experience while I'm in Vegas? Like, what's out there? I was feeling a little stressed and anxious about the trip because it was a week that I wasn't working. And I was just like, well, what is the point of this other than, of course, to enjoy time? And the card that I had gotten was about like leaning into creativity. Like, I was going to experience a lot of creative energy while I was there. And new things were going to spark in terms of my interests and design. It didn't specifically say if it was related to business, like entrepreneurship or the creative energy within me. And I felt like the whole time I was just kind of waiting and wanting to experience that. And it wasn't until the last day that we were there, we went into the arts district and went to different local art galleries. And that was where I was just like, oh, wow, yeah. Everyone has such a unique design style, and I've been so worried about mine. And I just need to lean into who I am, what I want to do. Like, the act of creating for creation's sake rather than creating just for work. And that is something that I struggle a lot with because I'm always thinking about, what do other people think? How is this going to work for them? How is this going to be beneficial for their business? Funny enough, this is actually, that's the part that we're talking about in today's episode. But taking a step back for a sec, that was like a huge eye-opener for me in terms of my own mental, physical, emotional, spiritual, creative well-being, to not always think about other people and how they're going to perceive my work, but just to create. And that's outside of work, right? That's like the painting, the gardening, the drawing, the sculpting, that type of stuff that I do, not work related. But I just came back with a sense of clarity that, okay, I need to like lean more into the fun things in life and not just focus on work. Because as you guys listen to this podcast, you know, Jen and I are like low-key workaholics, and we are working on that. There's a lot that we're working on with balance and creating this expansive business and working from home and having, Jen has a family and I have a partner and I have friends in a life, and it's hard to balance all of them. But right now I'm just leaning into being creative with my hands outside of work. So that leads me into my biggest update. Well, I think it's the biggest update, is I started planting my seeds for the garden. So in Chicago, it's still pretty cold. It's low-key freezing. It's still a sweater, not even just sweater. It's like winter jacket weather still. But I started planting seeds in a seed starter in my greenhouse. It's like it's a redone IKEA glass cabinet that is turned into a greenhouse inside my house. And I planted all my seeds, and I'm so happy. They've been in there for 4 days and they're already starting to sprout a little bit. If you guys are interested in my plant journey at all, you can follow me on Instagram at Essie's Plant Family. So follow me on there if you're interested in my journey. I cannot wait for hopefully a couple weeks from now. They're saying that like mid-April will be the last frost, and that's when I can then plant those little bulbs into the garden. So I'm excited. I have a full expansive garden. I've been reading this book. I've talked about it before about creating your garden full of so many senses. So not just vegetables, but like planting your vegetables next to flowers. And I'm really excited about all of that and just getting to play with color in the garden and then also take some of like those leaves and play with them. So anyways, I feel rejuvenated and I'm so happy to be here with you guys chatting today. Another update in terms of business is for the month of April and May, I will be working with one client only and I am thrilled. Let me tell you guys, I'm just like so beyond excited to be giving my full attention to one client. It is a bigger project that I have already been working on for a while, but now I get to fully focus on them and I'm so excited. It's surreal to think that 3 years ago when I started my business, I always thought, oh, I'd be hustling constantly and like always working a million different projects at one time. But within the way that I focused my business to like really niche down on who I want to work with, I've been able to really up my prices so that I can then work and focus on workus. That's a new word. I love that. Workus. I can workus on one client at a time. And I just feel like it's good for my soul. It's good for my client because they get my full attention. And I'm trying not to think of business anymore in terms of like just making a crap ton of money or like building this crazy empire. Rather, I am expanding my business, but I'm expanding in the sense of I get to work with one client and I get to pay myself well and still hire on contractors as I need to. And I get to provide the best experience for them. So I'm really excited about that. But I will keep you guys updated with that as the months go on. And I'm really excited. On to the conversation for today. Today, the title of our podcast is In the Eyes of the Beholder. So taking customer and client's point of view into consideration when you're creating any type of projects. And this is something that I have had to grow into a lot over the years. I learned a lot while I was in university about always thinking about another viewer. How are people going to see your creations? Particularly, I was studying advertising. And so we were always thinking about the consumer. How are they going to react? How are they going to want to buy or purchase or really be into this whole idea? And it's super important to be able to touch any lives and to be able to create anything that's worth sharing, worth interacting with. And so the customer and the client's point of view is really important, but also learning how to separate them and find the middle ground of where the customer and the client overlap, because you don't want to fully go into the client's point of view because they see themselves so tightly to the brand that if you're so deep in that, you may be losing out on how other people are going to view it. You also don't want to go fully into the consumer's point of view because then you're missing out on the layers of history and the deep meaning behind the client and how they have become part of their brand. So when it comes to creative work, such as brand design and web design, it's really important to keep in mind the perspective of the end user. So after all, they're going to be the ones who are interacting with the final product. And we do this in a lot of different ways. And I kind of just want to talk through four of those ways. So briefly, and then I'll get into all of these. First, by conducting research, using consumer-centric language, considering their user experience, testing designs by cross-checking how people are going to see it. At the end of the day, designs are not about us designers, like me, Esther, Sarah Design, how I create. And like I said at the beginning of this episode, I have thought about that a lot. Like sometimes I think maybe it just should be how I want to do it, but that's not the case. And that's not how a lot of businesses. I do want a disclaimer that you may be a designer who is marketing your services as this is my style. And when you sign on with me, you're getting my style. But in my experience, a lot of businesses don't necessarily want a specific style. They want something that's tailored to them and super unique to who they are, their story, their point of view, their place in the market and in their industry, and how it's going to stand apart from their competitors. So there's a lot of things to like that are floating around in the ether of how to go about any type of project. But I like to think that it's about moving the needle for our clients, telling a story and making something that is worth remembering. And that's a little bit of a callback to season 7, episode 6, where we talk about creating designs worth remembering. But let's dive into how to even go about taking people's point of views into consideration. So whenever I go about a project, I always start with conducting research. Before starting any type of design work, I always remember I have to like look and do a deep dive on the target audience. So this includes things like market research, user testing, sometimes surveys. I don't typically do surveys myself, but oftentimes the client, or sometimes I'll work with a survey system to collect data on an audience. So you can get insights on their preferences, behaviors, pain points. And also just the biggest point of research for me is design research, of course, because we're designers, right? So looking at who are the main competitors in your client's industry? What are they doing? I talked about this in season 7, episode 6, but going and looking at, if you're working for a product-based business, going to a store and seeing, okay, what are the competitors here doing? You can go and you can survey different colors and different fonts and see, okay, wait, how can I be different here? But in terms of putting your brand in the eyes of the consumer, really thinking about what do these colors mean? How are these colors that I want to use that are, of course, different than a competitor's brand? But what are these colors going to insinuate? So if you use, for example, blue is the sense of calmness. Do you want people to feel calm when they see your brand? Or do you want red, this like fiery, fierce color, to be shining through? What kind of journey do you want people to be on when they see your brand? And that's all part of this research, going and digging into how do you feel and how do other people feel when they see the competitors' websites or their brand packaging or their branding? What is the insight that you can get from them? And then also on the other side of digging into your clients, do research on who they are. Where have they been before? Maybe they have already rebranded 2-3 times. What has worked for them in those rebranding stages and what hasn't worked? What are things that you feel like need to stay? What are things that they feel like need to stay? A big part of rebranding is thinking about their story and doing research on the history of that. So maybe they started their sustainability business 20 years ago when there was really nothing out there. And now there's so many sustainable brands out there that it's almost hard to differentiate between all of them. So it's really important to see also where, like I said, where they have been and how you can build upon that or use their history to your advantage. And also then it takes a lot of work, but going into their competitors and seeing where have their competitors been, what's the history there, and how can you use that to your advantage by not necessarily pitting each other against each other, but how do you differentiate? So that's the whole point of the research phase, is to differentiate yourself from another business and also really understanding the audience and really understanding your client itself. Once you get into the design and the messaging and the strategy, it's really important to use customer-centric language. So when you're creating brand messaging, maybe you're coming up with a value list or website copy, it's really important to use language that speaks directly to your target audience. So during the research phase, you'll probably have found out certain buzzwords or phrases that people love to hear and also that people hate to hear. So stay away from the ones that they hate to hear, the things that are constantly used, like unprecedented, remarkable. Like, certain adjectives are just used over and over and over again, and I'm sick of them, and we need to just scrub them from everywhere. The word modern is not modern anymore. There's so many words. When I used to do some clients that are in the wedding industry, like wedding photographers, and oh my gosh, you guys, if I hear another authentic, I'm gonna flip out, because you can stay authentic, but what does that really mean? Like, what do your clients actually want to feel? You yourself, well, I'm speaking to the client. The client themselves may actually view themselves as authentic, but as the designers, the art directors, the strategists, our job is to help them come up with, craft another messaging that's going to be more relevant to the customer and how they actually want to feel and engage with your business going into it. Because this is about the customer's point of view. It's how they're going to view you. And it's crazy to think about, because yes, you could just copy other people's content. You can copy their messaging, but it's not going to be unique. It's not going to help the client. And they're then, like, if you think about their point of view, they're not going to be proud of it because it's not really unique to them. So use language that speaks directly to your target audience. This includes using language that resonates to their values and their concerns. I want to kind of focus in on that concern point, because when I go about this area, when I'm talking about messaging, I always like to think about the negatives. And hear me out for a sec. It's important to think about the negatives. Like, what are the pain points of the customer? What are they not finding anywhere else? What are they struggling with? What can they not get? What can they not feel? What do they need? What's going to emotionally satisfy them? Like, I mean, there's a lot of different questions that you can ask based on the industry that you're working with. But the big thing is, like, we're here to solve our customers' problems. And so if you want to really capture their attention and show them that you are the solution to that problem, it's important to use language that's going to address those concerns for them very clearly too. Not just like, oh yeah, we're your one-stop shop for gifts, like gifts and experiences for your clients. I say clients again. I say clients so much, but it's not about like saying, oh, you're a one-stop shop. It's about saying you are the solution for creating intimate experiences for you and your partner doing X, Y, and Z, or whatever the service may be. Being extremely clear with your offering so that they know exactly what you serve and how it's going to best serve them. So use customer-centric language. Also, avoid using any type of jargon or technical language that can be really confusing to your audience. Think about this, and if you're working on, say, I'm just going to throw out like a camera company, and you can use all of these different technicalities. Some people may think that that's going to be valuable. Some people might not, and you might need something that's a little bit easier for them to understand. That might not have been the best example, but the point is really focusing in on easy to understand language. Not everybody even speaks English, so we need to think about words that are going to be easy for them to digest and get, and also still invigorate. Then consider the user experience. So this is important, not just through websites or apps. We think about user experience, that term for websites and apps, but I like to think of the user experience in terms of what colors they're going to see first, what fonts they're going to see, what wording they're going to see. So, and the packaging, like, what is their experience from start to finish of interacting with your brand? So this includes everything from the navigation of your website, to the layout and the visual design of the print materials that they engage with. Maybe it's a book company, like a stationery company. You have to think about how they're going to experience those. And making sure that the user experience is very intuitive, very easy to use, very engaging. And the user experience is their point of view into the world. So how do they experience the store when you come in? That may not be part of your job, as like, you might not be an interior designer, But you can start to think as a designer, the logo, how is that going to make people feel when they step in the door? And then the colors that they see on the walls, those will be tied in from the branding. So thinking about things from a holistic point of view, rather than from just the logo itself. I think we a lot of times just think about the logo itself, but it's really this whole ecosystem of how you're creating experiences for consumers in this whole sphere. The clients also get to experience that when they envelop themselves in the brand that you've presented them and they see, this is my world. This feels exactly like everything that I've created for my business, for myself, and the life that I want to envision. And if you could package it into a one studio loft for people to be able to walk into and see that this is their world, then you've done the user experience correctly. So it doesn't just tie into the digital aspect of it, but everything that you can feel, it's tangible and creates this emotional, visceral experience. Then lastly, it's really important to test your designs, of course. And that's not just testing them in terms of mockups and stuff like that, but making sure that it's meeting the needs of your audience. So we talked about taking the customer and client's point of view into consideration. We also talked about conducting research at the very beginning of it. At the end of it, you also still have to conduct a little bit of research to do the testing and making sure that it's hitting all the right senses, it's communicating the right things. A lot of times I will do this with my friends, people who are not designers, and I'll share with them a website or I'll share with them packaging or some print stuff that I've done and said, like, if you saw this, what's the feeling you get out of it? What's the key messages that you get out of it? So test your designs with real users because they give you some of the most honest, real feedback that you can ever hope for. Designers will give you nitty-gritty feedback, or they'll just be like, wow, that's so incredible. And we love that little ego boost. But real users help show you what you're missing because they're not in your design world constantly. So you can gain really valuable feedback on how to improve the product or even the website. I know sometimes we do have to just focus on digital stuff, but get feedback on the product so that you can then make adjustments and improve things as you go. I work with clients who do A/B testing with some of their ads, and that's super helpful to be able to see which one's performing better. And you can do it a couple of different ways, and then that way you can see what is really working best for each thing. So maybe it's the font size, maybe it's the message, maybe it's the colors, maybe it's the images. You can't ever specifically say that's what it is, but if you do enough A/B testing, you can narrow down and figure out what that is. So try to test that. There's also sites that once you do have stuff launched, you can use Hotjar to see different users, how their cursor experiences a website and things like that to see what things they click on. And those are things that you can do to go back and make adjustments as you need. So that's going to be after you launch a product, but that's also super important. It not just helps your clients, but it helps you in the long run to know, okay, customers usually like this type of style. They usually interact with this type of button the best. And it really helps a lot. If you have the capabilities to do like mini focus groups, I know there's a lot of sites online that you can cultivate different focus groups. That's super helpful as well. But overall, the whole point is just really think constantly, not like while you're not working, but constantly be thinking about how your customers are going to view any type of product that you're putting out for your clients. It's super important to take their point of view into consideration so that you can create the most engaging and effective designs. It's going to help you build a loyal customer base for your clients and achieve their business goals. But ultimately, we know that that also improves our business goals and helps just us understand as designers how to better serve our clients after every project. And if you're currently working on something and you're like, I don't have time to go back and do research or focus on how to use customer-centric language or really think the user experience, maybe you're at the end of a project, that's okay. It's not that you're doing anything wrong necessarily. This is just to help think about ways to work on it and be better, and how next time you can think about implementing one of these. Maybe you just do some research next time, or maybe you just do some testing next time. It's okay to kind of start where you're at and work through things a little bit and see what works for you. Maybe you work on the same type of client industry a lot of times, so you might not have to do this as much each time. Because once you do it really well once, if you're working in the wedding photographer industry, for example, then you don't need to do that again. Or if you're working a lot in service providers, you have things that'll repeat. They will change a little bit, but they'll repeat throughout your projects, and you'll get really good at pinpointing how to speak to customers, what type of user experience they need. And also, I just want to add another little note here that it's important to work with experts for all of this too. I love writing website copy myself, but not every designer does. So customer-centric language is something that I think about a lot. But if that's not you, work with a copywriter who does think about that and who can help take your customer and your client's point of view into consideration every time that they write a line of copy for you. It's really important to do that and find somebody who's really going to be holistic and think through things. And it also comes intuitively, I think. So somebody who's really talented at it. But yeah, there's a lot of things to think about. If you have questions, or if you have other things that you typically use when you're working on a project to think about the customer's and the client's point of view, please leave us a comment on Instagram or drop one in the Facebook group, because we'd love to continue this conversation. I think it's important for designers to continue thinking about how to best serve our clients, because this is the industry we're in. We're here to problem solve. We're here to serve other people. We are service providers, and it's not about us. It's nothing personal. None of this is personal. It's about how to create the best and most effective experience for our customers. So I hope you enjoyed this really short episode. I just wanted to share some of my experience and things that I'm working through. I am not an expert in this. This is something that I've been thinking about a lot as I work through. I specifically work on nonprofits, and I'm always thinking about how I want to take their donors and people who are going to help impact lives, how they need to be seen and how they need to feel. There's a lot within it, and there's a lot that we have to keep exploring and challenging as a design community. So I encourage you to continue challenging not just yourself, but other designers around you to experience what it's like as a customer and experience how to just serve your clients the best way that you can. So I believe in you. I know that you can do it. I know that we all as a community can continue to think about our clients and their customers, their clients, and just creating the best design world for all. So with that, I believe you guys have a great rest of your week.
We hope you enjoyed today's conversation. Subscribe wherever you're listening to make sure you don't miss an episode. And we'd be forever grateful if you left us a review on Apple Podcasts. We bet you've got designer friends who'd enjoy it too, so share it with them.
If you'd like to submit an inbox question for us to answer on air, or you want to get in contact with us directly, email us at inbox@betterbranddesigner.com.
Our Facebook community is one of the most positive, supportive, and fun groups we've ever been a part of. We'd love for you to join us. Search for Better the Brand Designer Podcast on Facebook.
If you love these conversations between designer friends and would like to support us, you can find us on Patreon at patreon.com/betterpodcast.
And visit us online at betterbranddesigner.com to learn more about our podcast and snag major discounts on our favorite resources.
Special thanks to our producer, John, from Wayfair Recording Co. See you guys again next week.